So what if caring for one houseplant could change the way that you think about the entire planet? Today, I am joined by one of the most inspiring sustainable plant parents I know, Nick Consumpis, also known as Farmer Nick on social media. He's an urban farmer. He's a plant coach. You might have seen him on Netflix as The Big Flower Fight. He's been a plant friend of mine since our New York City days many, many years ago. And we're bringing this conversation that I had with Nick a couple of years ago back out of the archives as part of the Best of Growing Joy series, because I thought it was a really interesting conversation looking at houseplants from a different lens, how they could actually be a gateway for low-waste living and regenerative environmental action, even if you're just caring for a couple of houseplants living in a small apartment in an urban environment. We break down sustainability without judgment and sharing realistic steps that plant parents can take to make a positive impact. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants. I'm so excited to have you after such a long wait.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's been marked on my calendar for years, it seems like.
For 2 years.
I was super pumped to sit down with you, and you've been one of my best plant friends for quite some time now, so it was long overdue.
Yeah, we met right before I left for cats in 2019, and I feel like we met, got to know each other a little bit, and then I just like dipped for a full year. So it only took the pandemic and you moving to California for us to finally get on the phone for an on-air conversation.
Absolutely. No, whatever the circumstances, we made it happen. So I'm happy to be here today.
Yes. And this topic that we're about to dive into has really been something that's been really on my mind. And I knew you were the perfect person to dive into sustainability and plant parenthood. But before we dive into that, I want our audience to know, who is Farmer Nick and how did you become the plant parent Netflix sensation that you are now?
I don't know about Netflix sensation just yet, but my name is Nick Consumpis. Farmer Nick NYC, although now in Los Angeles. And I would consider myself a plant coach and urban farmer whose mission is to give people the knowledge and confidence they need to create their own green spaces in the pursuit of regenerative environmental action. That idea of sustainability and environmentalism is really important to me. And when I first got into plants, I was not into the house plants that you see around me. I grew up in White Plains, New York, not too far from our host here today.
Yeah. Fun fact, Nick and my mom live around the corner from each other.
Yeah, really, really close. It's a great little suburban neighborhood. And when I graduated from college in 2014, I was very much set up to live this corporate America life. I had a great job lined up at IBM and was going to be living at home, commuting to the city, something that people living in Westchester and places like that are very accustomed to doing, right? Very cookie cutter kind of life there. And my mom suggested, she said, hey, if you're living here rent free, you have to do something around the house. Like, you can't just sit around here all summer. I was like, well, what do you want me to do? And she said, you have this background in personal training. You were an athlete. You love food and nutrition. Why don't you start a garden? And this was not something I'd ever done before. I had never owned a plant. And I was like, you know what? Great. I love working with my hands. I love being outside. Let's do it. And from the moment I put that first, I think it was a tomato seedling in the ground, I was just obsessed. Like, each season, the garden just kept growing and growing and growing to the point where it wasn't just tomatoes anymore. It was cucumbers, heirloom varieties of squash, corn, sweet potatoes, sunflowers, you name it. I was growing it. And I was just getting so much fulfillment from not just growing the food that I could eat, but being out there in the morning and watering and giving food to my neighbors and seeing their expressions when they were biting into a fresh tomato for the first time. Like, it was incredibly rewarding. And from there, I moved into New York City 3 years later and really went into shock. Like, I all of a sudden am in this little concrete box and I didn't really know what was going on. Emotionally, I didn't feel the same. Mentally, physically, I just did not feel myself. So I did the only thing that made sense to me at the time, which was buy 1 to 87 house plants. And that was kind of my saving grace there for a while, and developed the skills on the house plant side as well. And was encouraged by some friends to start an Instagram, which was not my forte, not something I ever wanted to do. But fast forward 2 years later of posting on Instagram, I quit my full-time job working in corporate America and now have my full-time plant business, both on Instagram and just helping people bring green into their homes.
Yes, I have so many thoughts on what you just said, but you transitioned to being a full-time plant coach. You help coach people who want to bring plants into their space on like the right plants. That's one side of your business, right?
Yeah.
And then you also have your Instagram account, which has lots of beautiful photos and lots of amazing information. And you were recently on Netflix's The Big Flower Fight. And you are awesome. And I just want to say, I loved the umbrella. Whoever's listening who's watched the show will know what that means. And you should go watch Nick if you have it. It's the plantiest show out there, I think, right now. Yeah. And it was so fun to watch you and Taylor compete. So congratulations on that.
Thank you, Maria. I appreciate it.
Now, I took a few notes on some of the things you said that I want to go back to. Regenerative environmental action. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah. So for those that are involved in the sustainability space, the word sustainability has kind of gotten, I think, overused in many ways. And everyone says, oh, this is sustainable and this is sustainable. And it's very much an umbrella term.
Yeah.
But it's something that we don't truly understand. And one of the big shifts right now, I don't know if you've seen the Kiss the Ground documentary or anything related to soil health, but this idea of regenerative over sustainable is really taking hold. What I mean by that is sustaining what we currently have is not enough, right? Mm-hmm. Our food system is very much broken. The way we handle the environment is very much broken. And if we are sustaining the broken system, what good does that actually do? So this term regenerative is really important because it's not just about you doing the right thing for your environmental impact, but actually having a net positive impact on the environment. And the best example I can use, one's very apparent here in Southern California, is lawn space, right? So lawn space, as many people know, require tons of chemicals, and an area like Southern California, which experiences drought most of the year, water usage is big, right? You want to be able to cut that down and save as much water as you can. So the sustainable option would be to say, I'm just going to put some gravel down or artificial turf and maybe some succulents or something like that. And that way I'm not using any water. Fine. That's a good option. But the regenerative option would be, what can I plant that might be native, that might actually enhance the quality of my soil, or something that provides something to my community in terms of nourishment, like a front yard garden, for example. Mm-hmm. So if I were to do that option, I'm actually doing something that's regenerative, putting things back into the earth and taking something that I can then give to my community or give to my family that is beneficial for our health. So I think breaking it down in those different ways is going to expose people to other options that they might not have considered previously.
That's so interesting. So have you seen that tie into like houseplant people?
I don't think it's tied in enough.
Yeah, because I don't necessarily see the connection. I want to see a connection there, but I feel like there can still be a disconnect.
I agree. And it's sort of my philosophy that if I can get you to care about this one little plant on your desk, mm-hmm. I can start to get you to care about the big plant that we all live on. And what I mean by that is people need to see it to believe it. And until you've had a plant for the first time and nurtured it, you don't really know what that experience is like. So how are we supposed to, as urban people living in cities, make responsible decisions for our planet when we are so disconnected from the planet we are trying to protect?
Yeah.
And I think having a houseplant will be that first initial bridge that connects the natural world with what we have inside. And I've seen it with my own clients where they might start with 5 houseplants in their apartment. And then they call me and say, hey, Nick, I'd love to grow my own food on my fire escape. Great. And then they see, hey, Nick, I saw you posted something about being low waste or plastic free. Can you tell me more about that? What else can I do? Mm-hmm. And seeing that kind of evolve and level up in those ways, just having started with a houseplant, that's my ultimate goal, right? Move them from the houseplant person over to something that is going to be a little bit more environmental focused. And I think when you've come to some of the potlucks in New York City, you've met people who are houseplant focused, agriculture focus, kind of exposing and cross-pollinating all these ideas so that the houseplant people can say, huh, maybe it's not enough to just have a beautiful bird of paradise in my room. Maybe I should try something else that is going to help protect things like this.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a real example of that in just like wanting to do this episode with you, you know, because I think the sustainable, low waste, zero waste lifestyle hasn't necessarily always appealed to me, or it hasn't been a priority. And as I definitely cultivate my green thumb indoors, that's definitely something that definitely resonates with me personally. And I'm really obsessed with the concept of plant blindness right now. I think a lot of what you talk about is like people who are blind to plants, like they have been kind of ingrained to not notice the green life around them and also not recognize that it is living. Like, I think so many of us don't see a tree and like really understand like, oh my God, that thing has been living.
The furniture.
Nature, not furniture. Exactly. Nick is wearing his t-shirt right now. Yeah. And that awakening that I think a lot of people go through with houseplants, like I remember being so blind to whatever plants were in the room. And then once I started caring for plants, all of a sudden, like any room I walked into, the first thing I saw was whatever houseplants were there. And then noticing the trees on my street and how they grew. Like I lived in an apartment for years and I couldn't have told you the type of tree that was like outside my door that I walked through every day. So it's super interesting. And I love that you're rooted, for lack of a better term, but your mission goes deeper than just curating like an Instagrammable bedroom or shelfie. I think that's really awesome. Zero waste, I think, is super cool. And I've watched a lot of YouTube videos with a lot of different people that like get to say like, my whole year's worth of garbage is in this like one mason jar. And I think personally, a reason why it's been hard for me to kind of lock into this concept is it feels so unattainable. Like, I feel like no matter how many changes I make, I don't even understand how I could get to that kind of lifestyle. And you and I offline have talked a little bit about zero waste versus low waste. So can you kind of go over what these different trends are? And for people who are looking to make a better impact on the planet, like how you can kind of work yourself through all of the options that are available to us?
Yeah, I think it's a fabulous question. And just to go back a quick second, I think you're so right when it comes to plant blindness. I think the same applies to waste blindness.
Yeah.
Trash that we see around our space. And when you get a package, you're just, oh, you got to take off all this plastic and do this. And you don't even think about it, right?
Totally.
So I think as a society, when we see something that says zero waste, it is very intimidating and it is very overwhelming. And you say, oh, well, I can't be zero waste, so I'm not going to change anything. Totally. And that's some of the problems I see with some of these folks on Instagram or whatever platforms. Because if it is intimidating, you're not going to reach the person who is too afraid and anxious to make that first step towards a positive impact. So for me, low waste has always been the goal. Even if I strive for zero waste, I recognize that there are certain things in my life and in my business that are inevitable, right? If I'm ordering planters, there's a good chance they're going to be wrapped in something, right? Mm-hmm. And if the client wanted those things, I can suggest a different option that might have better packaging or this or that, but they're the ones who are making those decisions. And I think as a consumer personally, there are very many difficult ways to get around it. But being in the pandemic, ordering things off Amazon, it is tough.
Yeah.
So I think finding ways to be low waste, and when you can't be necessarily zero waste, making sure the products themselves are top quality, sourced sustainably with the right materials so that you can justify and say, you know what? I bought this bed that was covered in plastic when it came to me, but it was made ethically. It was made from responsibly forested wood, and there's no toxic dyes or this or that. That way you can justify and say, okay, it might not have been zero waste, but there's so many other benefits to it. And I'm not going to need to buy a new bed for 20, 30 years because it is really good quality. So there are other factors that we should consider that will not necessarily justify the waste, but really show that there are many other sides to the coin.
Yeah, it's almost like minimalism. Like I'm going to have 3 shirts that are going to be expensive and high quality and really nice instead of 40 shirts from Forever 21 or like, you know, whatever else.
Fast fashion, exactly.
Fast fashion. Why now more than ever is it important for all of us to wake up when it comes to this?
Thank
This episode of Growing Joy with Plants is brought to you by Manicora Honey, the richest, creamiest, most delicious honey I have ever had. It's why I've been talking about this product on my podcast for like 2 years now. If you've been listening, you know that I love Manicora Honey in my coffee every morning. I use it as a dupe for that brown sugar shaken espresso. And sometimes often in the afternoon, I'll pair it with some cheese or an apple as a snack. When I'm saying honey, you might be rolling your eyes being like, Maria, what the heck? You're picturing some sort of like honey bear shaped honey bottle at the supermarket. That's not what this is. It's single origin honey. And Manicora honey is actually honey that's come from bees that gather nectar at the Manuka tree, which is packed with bioactives that give this honey 3 times more antioxidants and prebiotics than regular honey. It is totally a game changer. And all you need is 1 heaped teaspoon each morning to get the most out of all of those amazing bioactives. Plus, it tastes like caramel. It's so freaking good. It doesn't taste like any other honey you've tried. And now, if you want to try Manicora honey, it's never been easier. All you got to do is head to manicora.com/bloom to save up to 31% plus $25 worth of free gifts with the starter kit. It comes with the MGO 850 plus Manuka honey jar, honey travel sticks, which are great. I take them on like long weekends, a wooden spoon, and a guidebook. So that's manicora.com/bloom to save 31% plus $25 worth of free gifts. Manucora.com/bloom.
Yeah. So first of all, I think we've just been asleep for so long.
Yeah.
And I joke that if we want to really solve climate change tomorrow, we would take all of the trash that we send to places like Asia and just dump it in the Hamptons. And they're like, oh my God, what is this? Where did this come from? Like, this is what you just don't see. Right?
Yeah.
This is what happens and you've turned a blind eye to it. So I think that for me, this connection with plants is very much tied to environmental movement and people who care about the environment start buying plants and getting into that and vice versa. So I think the biggest thing for us right now is to figure out what are those tiny little micro steps, those little tips, whether it's for your own lifestyle or maybe even with your plants that you can start adopting that they're not going to change your whole carbon footprint, but they're going to make you start thinking about things differently and have you adopt other behaviors that will compound on each other.
Just like the houseplant being the gateway drug to pursuing this a little harder. So you have put together a bunch of tips for us to start low waste in our lives and then low waste in plant parenthood, because I think we love this houseplant community. The issue of consuming a lot as houseplant parents and ordering a lot of plants, and it's an expensive hobby that requires a lot of ordering online. So I'm excited to talk to you about both of those sets of tips. But before we dive in, like, this episode is meant for the ultimate beginners, and I'll do my part in asking all the questions that everybody's afraid to ask, but like, no judgment from either of us. Like, Nick and I just want to have this like open conversation to get everyone excited and inspired and not intimidated. Like, just, I know personally, I've been for many years. So for us beginners and outside of plant parenthood, like, what are some basic shifts that we can make to start reducing our waste?
Yeah. So the first part is just reuse everything. Literally take a look at something, pick it up. And instead of that Marie Kondo style of, does it bring me joy? And if not, throw it away. Instead saying, what purpose do you have now? And what functions can you serve later? And one of those things for me that I really love is, and I got this Araby blanket, which came—
Oh, the weighted blanket.
It's the best. It's so good. And so part of their packaging, there was no plastic, which was great. And it had this kind of canvas sack. And I was like, huh, like, I wonder what I could do with this. And I actually took some of the string that it came wrapped in, poked some holes in it, hung it up in my closet, and it is my hamper. Like, I literally took my coat, I throw it in there. And not only was that reusing something, but then I didn't have to go out and buy something new, right? So it saved on 2 accounts there. So finding ways to reuse within your home, I think, is huge. One of the other tips that I have is when it comes to packaging specifically, is if you do get packaging, let's say you order something on Amazon or something fragile and it comes wrapped in bubble wrap, I save that stuff like crazy. Like, I just have a box of wrap. A lot of the companies now are having lots of cool alternative types of packaging, whether it's compostable packing peanuts, which are really cool. I know Lush and our friend Stevie has those as well for her lotions. And then there's also these kind of cardboard options. But even if you do get the more traditional bubble wrap or those big air pockets that are so fun to pop, like resist the urge, take them, throw them in a box. And the next time you need to ship something or ship a plant cutting to one of your friends or something along those lines, you have something instead of having to go out and buy something net new. So I think that's really important.
Before we dive into more tips, I realized, I think, can I have a definition of what is waste? Because you mentioned plastic. So is plastic the biggest thing that we're looking to reduce? Like, what does waste mean?
Man, that's a loaded question, Maria.
Yeah.
My definition of waste is something that will truly end up in a landfill. Right?
Okay.
That's the goal to avoid. I know some people have different definitions of it, but for me, it's like, if this does not exist in my house or it's some kind of function and ends up in a landfill, I have failed in that way. So if I'm going to limit my waste, I'm going to save things, not in a hoarder kind of way, just enough to keep it clean and simple, but at the same time, trying to find different uses for as many things as possible and give it a new life, even if it ends up in the landfill in 10 years, it's still 10 years that it served a purpose and I didn't need to get something else. So don't just think in the current moment, it's also in the future moments as well.
A big light bulb moment for me with waste was when New York City rolled out its composting program and we got a composting bin and started composting. And when I started realizing how much food waste was going in our garbage bags that was going into the dump, that was crazy. And it's kind of devastating with COVID that New York has had to like kind of cancel. I mean, I think it's still not running anymore. Like they had to pause the composting system, but that was like a huge realization for me in regards to waste. And then obviously like plastic being a big thing. And is plastic so bad because number one, it ends up in landfills, but number two, I mean, I guess that's also like a big VOC emitting thing, yeah. Right?
There's a ton of reasons why plastic is tough. I mean, the fact that petroleum is used so much in the production methods. When you get down into microplastics, when you're washing clothes, there are certain materials in your clothing that will be washed away into the waste streams and will end up in the bellies of fish and in our waterways and ecosystems there. Single-use plastics is the thing we think most about. And I think I'm not against buying something that's made of plastic if I can use it forever, right? It's going to be here forever. Right? I might as well use it forever. And if I'm not able to do it, can you buy it from a company that works with a proper recycling agency like TerraCycle, for example, which has partnered many brands to allow you to take Tupperwares or things like that and give them new life, send them back and replace those products and recycle them efficiently? Because believe it or not, we might throw our plastics inside the bin and feel really good about ourselves, but the vast majority of that plastic is not actually recycled. So it may make us feel good in the moment, but doesn't actually have a good impact.
Yeah. Like what's the deal with that? I've heard that a lot of the stuff we think that we are quote unquote recycling isn't actually getting recycled.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on your local community's sort of municipality programs for that, because it's all about organizing, right?
Right.
There are certain labels and numbers that are assigned to those recycled goods that if they're not at the right facilities, they're not going to be properly disposed of or recycled. And one of the things that I really struggle with from a greenwashing perspective, which is when companies will say, oh, look, we're doing this one sustainable thing out of the 99 things that we do that are horrible. Like one of the things that I see most about, or see most often rather, is the number of compostable plastics. And it's like, oh, don't worry, like the top of your salad is compostable, so it's all good. But how many people are realizing that, A, it requires a special facility? How many people are actually going to go to that facility versus how many people will just say, oh, I'm done with my salad, throw it in the recycling or throw it in the trash? There's no point in a compostable good if it's not actually getting composted. So that's really important. And understanding if something is truly biodegradable or not versus something that is compostable. I mean, I use this phone case from Payla and I can bury this when I'm done and then it's gone. And that's awesome.
You can like bury it in the ground and it'll just decompose?
Bury it in the ground.
Shout out to Payla case. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's pretty cool.
That's really cool. And I definitely want to ask you about the brands that you're loving. I'm not going to ask you to like go deeper down this dive on like actually what can recycle, but do you have resources or books that you would suggest listeners to go check out in this specific thing? Because I feel like for me, I'm like, oh gosh, I got a lot to learn when it comes to this.
Yeah. So not necessarily books, although I probably should brush up on some of the more current processes and stats out there. But Lucy Biggers has been a tremendous influence on me. She's the sustainability sort of reporter and producer at Now This. She's gone to these landfills. She's gone to recycling facilities and shown the behind the scenes. And I think those videos are so productive because they literally show you exactly what's happening. And it's quick content too. So it's pretty enjoyable.
Amazing. Okay, we'll link to her and her work in the show notes. Thank you for that. Sorry, I interrupted you in the midst of your tips with clarifying questions, but you were saying always upcycle. So always try and use what you can and turn it into something else. I love your hamper story. That's awesome. During COVID, I was doing a lot of plant swaps with friends and listeners online. And I was totally doing that, saving my Amazon boxes and the packaging and then reusing them.
Yeah, beautiful. So one that we talked about before, which is buying quality versus buying something that you're going to have to replace. The thinking fast mentality will be, why would I buy the $100 sweater when I can buy the $20 sweater, which looks just as good? And in reality, if you break it down financially, because that's most people's biggest driver, they think things that are sustainable are more expensive, which they are in the short term. If you have to buy that sweater 10 times over the course of 20 years because it's low quality, it rips, this and that, versus just keeping that $100 sweater once, you've saved a significant amount of money. Mm-hmm. So I think taking a moment to reflect on that and say, okay, yes, this is better for me now, but will it be better for me in the future? And is it better for the environment at all? Those are important questions that really give me a moment of pause when I am shopping. And to be honest, and this brings me to my next topic, is I haven't shopped for anything new in over a year.
Really?
Yeah, I have not bought anything net new in, I think, over a year and a half now. I haven't like gone to a mall and like bought myself like a new jacket or anything like that. Everything that I get is thrifted. And that is the best way to do it, because even if you're buying something that isn't necessarily good for the environment when it was made, you're preventing that thing from going to a landfill, and you don't have to buy a new product. Because even if you're buying the most sustainable product in the world, there was still energy required to produce it. There was still resources, water, all these things, transportation costs to ship it to where you are. So buying not new things has become a big sort of tenet of my consumerism. And it's never been easier to do it, whether it's eBay or Facebook groups or Buffalo Exchange, any of these kind of thrift stores. It is really a fantastic way to find some cool new finds. And it's kind of fun to go there and like not know what you're going to get.
My mom, we're currently in the midst of selling my parents' house and they're trying to figure out what to do with their furniture. And my mom was like, Facebook Marketplace, you can get some good deals on Facebook Marketplace in your neighborhood, you know, and you do curbside pickup and it's like super easy. So that's so interesting. Wow. And when it comes to having to get something new, like if you're getting a new bed or if you move and need furniture or like something new, then are you going to companies who use recycled products? Is that the kind of filter you go through?
Not just recycled products, but also just seeing like if they are manufacturing something new, how are they doing it? So the best example is this company called Medley, which makes the most beautiful furniture that I've seen. And it is done in a way that every aspect of the manufacturing process is accounted for. So it's all handmade here in California. It uses FSC certified wood, which is when you go into a forest, you're responsibly harvesting that wood as opposed to just chopping down the whole forest. And there's many sort of restrictions and limitations that they have when sourcing that wood. A lot of their products are made from bamboo, which is one of the more sustainable materials that you can have because it grows like a weed. It's essentially just a grass. And when I spoke with them, they're a family-owned business. And one of the executives of the business said, I'm a mother and I wouldn't want my kids to be on something that was A, harmful for their health, or B, harmful for the environment. And I want to set that standard. So I fell in love with them. Their furniture, again, would fall into that category of like, hey, it's probably pricier than the IKEA, but like, is it going to last forever? And is it a better impact on the environment? The answer is unequivocally yes. So in putting together this sort of what I call the eco-ethical bedroom. The furniture selections were the same. Avocado mattress, same kind of thing. The Kayuchi sheets, all these brands, which I'm happy to send over to you so you can link it out as well. They're doing things so mindfully and with so much thought for the environment, it was hard to not support them.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of reframing that happens in how you show up. It makes me think of like a business that has like a code of ethics or tenants, like core tenants. You kind of make some core tenants for yourself as a consumer and decide how you want to show up as a consumer, which I think is something that a lot of people very comfortably don't evaluate because we don't really have to right now, because you can just like click a button and get whatever you want delivered over to you.
It's so easy. And the pandemic, although I think it's great that people had access to things like Amazon and could order things right to their doors, it's again creating a lot of waste. So I think how we can sort of reframe, as you said, what identities we want to have on that spectrum, because it's not black and white. There's a lot of in between. I mean, this shirt that I'm wearing now is a shirt from Recover Brands. It's a customized shirt, and it's the best customized shirt I could create because it's made of 50% recycled cotton, cotton that's been upcycled, and then 50% actually recycled plastic water bottles, which is very cool. But is this the most sustainable option? No, because I still use energy to create this shirt, even if it was from materials that had already existed. So you have to kind of pick your battles and realize that you'll never be perfect no matter what.
Yeah. But just think about if everybody in the world takes a step towards being better collectively, like that's a huge impact.
Yeah.
And on the scarier side is if people don't, and that's collectively an even scarier impact, you know?
Yeah, we need a billion people being 10% better, not 10 people being 100% zero.
I love that. 10% better. Yeah. And that's achievable. In the parallels of plant care education, like the difference between a successful plant parent and a plant killer is education and just like understanding how to successfully care for something. And I feel like it's very similar here where you really just need to do a little bit of research, like watch a couple of videos, and then you're not going to be able to kind of unsee what you've seen and hopefully change for the better there. So I've heard about this, people thinking they're recycling and not actually recycling and that kind of stuff. So what are the common mistakes that you see people make in the beginning of their low waste journey?
Man, I've made every mistake.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm still making a bunch of them.
This is why I think composting is a little bit more complex than people give it credit for. If you were a professional composter, you'll recognize that there are certain ratios between the brown and the green. Green being your food scraps, brown being your yard waste that need to be achieved in order to create the right soil mix. I've seen some gardeners where they'll only use their food scraps, and that's good from that food scraps didn't end up in landfill perspective, but it can alter their soil and can change the way their plants are growing. So that's one mistake I often see. But from a low waste side, I see too many people falling victim to like, oh, I have to buy new products that are low waste. And they recycle everything in their home. And they say, oh, I've got a clean house. I'm going to just get rid of everything and restock it with the right things. And in reality, it should be, okay, let's take a look at those things first. Let's do an audit and see, okay, these 10 things I can keep and repurpose and do something different. Whereas these 10 things, yeah, maybe I might need to replace it. So we get so excited when we want to take on a new project that we very much jump to the consumer side first, as opposed to saying, okay, let's take inventory first and then I can make some more educated choices.
That is so interesting because I definitely feel like in the low waste movement, you see everyone with like all of their bamboo forks and whatever else, but it's not necessarily about having the right thing. It's just about working with what you've got. And just like you said, this might be a weird question, but I've gotten into the practice of this because I had a roommate who told me, but when you do recycle, you have to wash all the containers, right? Like if they're dirty, they're going to be taken off the line.
I don't know the true specifics behind that. It's something my mom always preached when I was little. If this isn't clean, they're not going to be able to take this and recycle it properly. I'm always washing my aluminum cans, things like that, that go into the recycling. It's funny, my grocery shopping is actually 100% plastic free. That's the one area where I have truly zero waste. And the aluminum cans are something that I would consider zero waste because aluminum can be recycled properly and it's not a one-time plastic purchase. But if those cans aren't clean, then you're not going to be able to effectively handle that yourself or handle it at the facilities. And one way to get around that is to find bulk stores. I think bulk stores are such a cool way to fill up on items that you might traditionally buy in plastic. And I know it's tough during the pandemic, depending on which grocery stores you're going to, they might have shut down their bulk sections, but you can find it, bring your own jars and everything like that is a great way to limit your waste.
Yeah. So what does that look like for you? 100% zero waste grocery shopping.
I mean, I have a million produce bags. Like these are bags that I've gotten from every event where for some reason over the last 2 years, giving a canvas bag away at an event was like something everyone had to do. And you end up with a stack of canvas bags. You know, like how is this sustainable? It's so ironic, right? So I use a lot of those. I'm in the supermarket. I don't buy any of like the clamshells where you're having lettuces wrapped up in there. I'm not buying anything that's in bags. I'm not using the flimsy little plastic bags to take broccoli or lines or throw them in those bags. I have something for every occasion, but it does get tricky, right? And I actually wrote a blog post about this called the sort of produce paralysis, because should I buy the lettuce that came from California, traveled thousands of miles to get here, but it's not in plastic? Or should I buy the lettuce that's in the plastic clamshell from Gotham Greens in Brooklyn?
Right. That's technically local.
Exactly. You go through these crazy mental exercises in your head, trying to figure out which one's better. And ultimately, I go for the one that doesn't have plastic because the plastic will be there forever. But man, if there's a way for these companies to develop new solutions in packaging, which I know they're working on, that aren't plastic based, I think it's going to be a game changer.
Right. Because that's so interesting. Gotham Greens, like amazing company, indoor hydroponic farm in New York City, is doing like pretty cool stuff. But it's interesting that they lose that comparison, like that they lose that argument in your head.
It's really tough.
Yeah, I definitely want to read that produce paralysis blog you've written. And that sounds really interesting. Yeah, because I definitely use those little plastic produce bags. Do you just eliminate them and just put the broccoli right into your canvas bag and that's it? Or do you bring your own plastic bags that you put the broccoli in?
This was the time where I think buying a sustainable product would be good. So I bought specific netted canvas bags, this little small ones that are great for individual pieces of produce. I'll put those in my cart. And then I have the bigger canvas bags that I got at those events. And those are like my shopping bags.
Got it.
So I don't need the brown ones or anything like that.
And then when it comes to stuff you buy in like boxes, like cereal or like stuff like that, you're doing all bulk.
Yes. It's tough because I want to buy the cereals and things like that. But you open up the cardboard box and then there's
plastic bag inside.
That single-use plastic bag, which I have nightmares of a sea turtle getting its head stuck into.
No, of course.
Yeah.
So targeting single-use plastics, that sounds like that's the low-hanging fruit for anyone
The easiest way is avoid in the produce section those really thin, flimsy bags. Avoid those at all costs. Get yourself a set of produce bags or reuse some bags that you might have at home and have those be the way to go with your produce, especially. But people think, oh, it's going to increase the cost of my produce shopping. These bags weigh like not even an ounce.
Right.
Like what produce are you buying where an ounce is going to be the difference, right? So
truffles, right?
If it's truffles, that's a different story. Huh. And they appreciate you for it when you go into the store. I think more and more employees and more stores are embracing this and encouraging it within their consumers.
Totally. I mean, Whole Foods gives you
a discount,
dime off or something. Yeah, you get a discount for every canvas bag you bring. So that's really interesting. Are there any hacks, like low waste hacks that you would recommend people trying?
Low waste hacks.
I know that you always have your mason jar and you always have your forks.
Yes, I'm obsessed with mason jars. I love them. I think they look great for so many reasons. But there's this one brand of salsa that I absolutely love, Green Mountain Gringo. And they have these beautiful mason jars. And it's not just about the mason jar, because oftentimes you may have found if you're trying to scrub the label off of a mason jar, there's some kind of adhesive on there, which really sticks way too much. And you're left with this weird look and it's kind of sticky to the touch. That's not good. But whatever they do on their labels, if you put that mason jar when you're done with the salsa in a pot of warm water for 10 minutes, that label will just come right off and you have a perfectly pristine mason jar for yourself. And I use these for drinking glasses. I use them for storing food. I'll buy the aluminum tops online so I can put those on top or reuse the one that I have. And I also use them for plant propagations. They look gorgeous. And having a stack of those, and maybe there's other mason jars from different companies where I can mix and match with the heights. It looks beautiful, super easy to do. And I carry it around everywhere.
I know you're not a coffee drinker, but, and this definitely depends on like the coffee shop, because like Starbucks doesn't do it and that kind of stuff. But do you suggest like bringing mason jars or like reusable cups to those single-use plastic moments?
Yeah, I kind of have an emergency cup with me everywhere I go.
Really?
For those reasons. And if it's not a mason jar, it could be a reused plastic cup that I've had for a while or something along those lines. A lot of companies, I know Starbucks in particular, sells their own version of those things, which is fine, right? If you're a frequent Starbucks shopper, that's great. But always ask and never be embarrassed to ask, because I think people get shy and they don't want to be a hassle or something like that. But just put your ego aside and realize, you know, I'm doing this for something greater than myself. I'm going to ask. If they say no, great, I can move on.
Yeah, worst comes to worst is they say no. And then at least you can live with the fact that you tried, you know?
It's a good lesson in rejection.
Absolutely. One of my favorite hacks, and this one of my, an influencer I know, she absolutely influenced me. I saw these on her Instagram and I bought them, but I love drinking through a straw, but I hate plastic straws and I haven't found like a good substitute. And I saw these glass straws and they're like fully reusable, made of glass. They come with a cleaner. And so those are what I use. And then I don't use straws when I'm out. But the bamboo straws, I feel like never took, because they get really dirty on the inside and then you can't see through them. So you can't really see like how dirty they're getting.
Yeah. And they give you those little pipe cleaner looking washers and everything. The metal straws, glass straws are great. I love throwing those in the dishwasher because it makes it super easy.
Yeah.
So that's a good one. I like that.
I had a bamboo straw and I had the pipe cleaner and I didn't know that I had to clean it. And then I learned that I had to clean it. And I tried to clean it the first time and it was like black on the inside. And it was something I was drinking with all the time. And I was drinking water, but I don't know. I just didn't know.
Yeah.
So I went to clean it. And
this explains everything.
I know exactly. A little off is like I have fungus in my brain from the straw. Yeah. And so after that moment, I was like, I got to go glass. I can't do it. So for people who are going to start using straws, metal or bamboo straws, make sure you clean them. And don't be creepy like me. Okay, so zero waste and Planned Parenthood. I think there's lots of opportunity here. And I think you're so uniquely suited to help our community do that since you have feet in both sides. So first comes first, like everybody who I asked, I told people we were talking and everyone who wrote in wants to know, what do we do about plastic nursery pots?
I know everyone who's listening to this has a stack of them.
Yeah.
Stowed away somewhere, right?
100%.
In the basement, under their deck, wherever it is, you've got them. And I think there are so many unique opportunities to address that and find new ways to bring life to these things that otherwise would just be garbage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're very unavoidable. So a couple different things here. Number one is, if you don't want to reuse them yourself, go to a nursery and say, hey, I bought some plants from you before. Do you want these back? And a lot of them will say yes, because it saves them money. And some have programs where even if you're going to a local plant shop, they will take them back for you, which is great. That's low-hanging fruit, number one. Number two is cache. And cacheing your plants is a method where you're going to take a plant that's in a pot and put it inside a larger pot. Usually that larger pot does not have a drainage hole, but we all know that drainage is still very, very important, probably the most important thing in our watering schedules. But doing so and having some pots on hand that if you do need to repot into a nursery pot, and then cache into something else is another really easy thing to do.
Is it pronounced cache? Because I've been calling it cash for like 2 years.
I have no idea.
Cache. My God, I'm embarrassed.
We need a pronunciation check.
We need a pronunciation.
You got it.
Well, you know what? None of us are pronouncing plant Latin correctly either. So one of us is right. I'm happy to be wrong.
But
I've definitely been calling it cash pot. I heard someone call it cash po. I was like, oh, I guess that's the fancy name for it. I'll be fancy.
That sounds way cooler. Like, oh, man, I cash that plant.
But cachet sounds really fancy, too. You're very fancy. Well, that's my favorite recycling is, I believe no pot should have no drainage hole. So I think that's a great one.
I'll challenge you on that a little bit, but that's a mm-hmm. different conversation maybe. Okay. We cachet, whatever we want with those nursery pods. Getting into more of the advanced things that you can do. One of my tricks, especially for those that like to garden outside as well, mm-hmm. one of the things that you think about when you're gardening outside is, oh, I don't need to worry about a drainage tray. It can just filter out. It's on my deck, whatever it is, it's totally fine. But what happens is sometimes there's soil that when you're eventually watering and watering and watering, that soil is eventually going to leak out of that drainage hole as well. And a great example is when you pick up a pot that you had in the same spot outside for a long time, and all of a sudden you look and there's this gross, disgusting stain. And oftentimes it's very hard to remove. And the easy solution to this is buying the plastic tarp, right? That goes in the bottom of raised beds and planters, and that prevents the soil from coming out. But we don't want to buy new plastic, especially plastic that is very much single use. It can't be recycled at all. So one of my favorite tricks, which I just posted about last week, is taking the smaller little nursery pots and putting them like a little tent over the drain.
Oh, yeah. You made an Instagram reel about this.
Yes.
Yeah.
I got so much feedback on it because people saying, oh my God, that's such a great way to use it. And it's going to function the same as you would if you put that plastic black mat down there. And I put it down there. I always put some LECA or hydration stones down there, regardless of whether or not it has a drainage hole, just for increased drainage. And that kind of keeps it in place. And then I add my soil and then I plant my plant. So it's a really good method to preventing that soil from leaking out. You can also do it with your indoor plants as well.
Love that. Yeah. You make like a little house, a little extra little house. These are for like larger, big containers that you're putting larger plants in, right?
I mean, it doesn't even have to be the larger ones, right? You know, if you go out and you buy some small succulents in like the 2-inch planter.
Right. And then you have the little guys.
Those, no problem. And especially for the smaller nursery pots that I get, which brings me to my next tip is that I'm constantly propagating plants and also germinating seeds. Mm-hmm. So if you have a space where you can kind of, whether it maybe it's a humidity dome or a germination station, whatever it might be, always think about growing something new. And you could literally have an edible garden of greens with the nursery pots that you use for your houseplants. How kind of closed loop is that, right?
It's something to think about.
So that's always a good way to reuse them. And then there's a couple of interesting companies that have popped up recently about how you can reuse plastic in different ways and mold it into different functional items or even artwork. One of the in particular, which I have not used yet because of the pandemic, but it's called Precious Plastic. And you can bring them plastic that you are worried it won't get recycled, or maybe it's not possible to recycle that plastic. And there's these machines that will break it down and melt it down and be molded into something new. So how cool would it be is to take your 20 plastic nursery pots, go to Precious Plastic, melt it down and turn it into a planter, or turn it into a coaster or this or that, right? So it's all about giving new life and being really creative in that process.
That's awesome. I definitely want to hit you up for a list of companies like that that we can put in the show notes for people to check out, because that's so cool. And I know a lot of people in our community are stressed about their plastic pot usage. I also feel like I'm seeing companies that are trying to come up with more biodegradable nursery pots. I definitely think in the next like 10 years, if not hopefully less than that, like 5, like I've already seen a few companies that are starting to like ship their houseplants or ship plants in more biodegradable options.
A good one. I've seen that a couple of times.
Who?
Coconut husk.
Oh yeah. Like coir. Yeah. So very interesting. And you had kind of mentioned this before, but propagating plants is a beautiful opportunity to upcycle stuff, because you could propagate something in anything. I mean, I've seen people propagating plants in old mason jars, in old salsa jars, like you say, but like truly anything you have lying around that holds water, you can stick a plant and make some new plants for new friends. And a lot of us who are sending plants to friends and sending friends gifts and doing these swaps that I see so many people doing, it makes me so happy to see people connecting that way during the pandemic, but trying to reuse your shipping materials. Yeah, Folia Collective uses those dissolvable packing peanuts. And the first time I used them, like they ship with the dissolvable packing peanuts and then you're supposed to put them in water and they like turn into soap.
How cool is that?
So cool.
I got to go visit them. They're in LA.
They're in LA, yeah. No, oh, they're the best. Danae is the best.
I can't wait to go visit. That's going to be so fun.
Yeah, shout out. So those were your zero waste steps. Any other zero waste steps for plant parenthood?
Here's a big one.
Okay.
This one is more so environmental. Choosing the sustainable soil options. I cannot emphasize that enough. Anyone who's going out there and wants to take care of the environment should not be buying from a company like Miracle-Gro that uses synthetic fertilizers, is owned by Monsanto, a company that's doing not so great things for our farmers and our land, especially in the Midwestern and Southern states where we might not be seeing a lot of that farming and a lot of those processes going on, but really buy from a quality soil provider. I know you and I both love Espoma. When it comes to a company that is doing things the right way, both from an environmental standpoint and a low waste standpoint, because some of their soil bags are also recyclable, which—
Oh yeah, their bags are recyclable and their plant is like all solar. They have like amazing commitments to the environment. Their company is awesome.
Yeah. So if anyone is looking for soil, Espoma would be the way to go, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's others that are doing some positive things, but soil is really important to me. And then the last thing here, which I think is going to be tough for some people to hear, but know your plant number. And what I mean by that is, let's say you have 100 plants and you're taking care of those 100 plants. They're all thriving. If you add plant 101 and then the quality of the care suffers for another plant and you start losing plants in your collection, that's not sustainable. And I think that being honest with yourself about, do I have the space? Do I have the time? Do I have the right environment for this? That is a lesson in sustainability because it's a lesson in restraint. And it's a lesson in taking a step back and saying, I don't need another. Mm-hmm. My number is 100. And your number might be 200, but Sam's number might be 6. And that's fine. So we can't just think about it in terms of what we're buying or what we're doing, also what we're not doing. And sometimes practicing that restraint and knowing your plant number and being really honest about it is the best way to limit waste and also take care of your plants the best way.
Oh my God, that's music to my ears. I mean, we just had a whole hour and a half conversation about this on an episode I recently did called How to Manage a Large Plant Collection, because this concept of plant numbers and like your threshold for whatever number that is, and it truly is different for every person. I know people in my community that have 3 plants and 3 is their limit. And they're so happy with 3 and they're getting everything they need out of their plant collection from that 3. And then I also know people that are so happy with like 240 plants. And so I feel like you can't prescribe a number to people, but I think it's so important to have them prescribe it to themselves. And also like the conversation of how we're consuming plants, if we're collecting plants in a healthy way emotionally, and also like if we're collecting plants in a healthy way, if you're getting packages of plants like every day, I don't want to like throw shade. It looks different for everyone. You don't know what each individual person is doing for the environment, but you do have to think about that because a lot of us order plants through the mail and a lot of plants come packaged not in nice ways with a lot of plastic and a lot of non-recyclable materials.
Maria, you're going to laugh. I've never ordered a plant by mail.
Have you really? Good never. For you.
For some of those reasons, right? You know, if I can find a local provider that has it, great. But there's a lot of packaging that goes into it. And there's also, you know, if you're getting some of these rare plants from across the world, right? That's a plane ride. You know, I've had some people say, oh, but you know, the plane's taking off anyway. I'm like, if everyone had that attitude, then we wouldn't get anything done from an environmental perspective. So I've never bought a plant that wasn't in person. And I hope to keep it that way.
Well, that's a great tip. I mean, as the world starts opening up again after COVID and as nurseries, I think we all held our breath for nurseries during COVID. And then it seems like it's worked out for the best with nurseries because people were all looking to grow their own food and everything. But that's a small step someone could take, is just trying to buy plants from their local nurseries instead of ordering. The next time you want to go order something specific, maybe call your local nurseries and see if they have it first and have them put it aside for you and try and do that. And then also like you get to know your local nurseries and you get to support
small businesses. Absolutely. Yeah. And you will be shocked at some of the variety that these businesses have. I mean, I was at a plant shop, a random plant shop, or it's actually more of a garden nursery in Atlanta. And I'm walking through their greenhouses, most of which were edible, and there's a variegated Monstera just hanging out.
Wow. Did you get it?
I went around. It's been there for weeks. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, there's a lot of hidden gems out there when it comes to the local nurseries and gardens. So cannot stress it enough, like really, really do your best to support those small businesses.
Love that. That's awesome. Are there any planty businesses specifically that you think are killing it when it comes to sustainability commitments and doing all these things that you're mentioning?
Yeah, one of the ones, the shop's actually in New York, Greenery Unlimited. I use them for a lot of my corporate installations, and there's no plastic in their packaging. So like when they send plants to a job site, it's all wrapped in like this really cool cardboard packaging material. And it's so refreshing. It's so nice. I can take all that. I can easily shred that up and compost it and throw it into my garden, right? There's a lot of positives to that. On a larger scale, it's tough, right? I think the plant industry, as I'm sure you've seen, is an old business. Mm-hmm. A lot of legacy family-owned kind of operations that have not necessarily thought about these things. And I think it would be amazing to see a brand like Costa Farms take a stance mm-hmm. on it and mm-hmm. say, hey, you know, we're eliminating nursery pots. We're going with this option. But I haven't seen that at scale yet, whether it's them or The Sale or Bloomscape or one of these bigger companies. It'd be cool to see who kind of takes the baton and takes the lead there in terms of sustainability in the environment.
Yeah. And I think it's coming. I mean, I think especially with hopefully our new administration coming in and the level of importance that sustainability in many different ways, hopefully will have for our country and the greater world. Also, we've been talking a lot about recycled water bottles. It makes me think of Wally in my wall. Yeah. The Wally Grow pockets are all made out of recycled water bottles. I feel like I'm seeing a lot of recycled, like,
got my Wally right here.
You've got a Wally Grow too.
We need to hang it up.
Yeah.
But Wally Grow's another one. I totally slipped my mind there. So thanks for the reminder.
Yeah. But I feel like I'm seeing a lot of different materials all being made out of recycled water bottles. I feel like there's a lot of innovation in that space right now. And I'm really excited to see what the next couple of years look like for that. But also, I also feel like I need to just take your advice you just gave us a few minutes ago and say, okay, stop thinking about the next thing you're going to buy and just deal with what you got.
Honestly, it's a balance. And if it takes a couple of these new products here and there to get you going and really feel enthusiastic, inspired by it, go for it.
Yeah, I love it. I wanted to hit you up with some listener questions before we wrap. Here was a great one. Can you compost perlite? Because there's perlite in all of our soil, all of our potting mixes.
That is a good question. I believe so. I've actually read a little bit about this. Some people say perlite's actually good for your compost because it's going to aerate a little bit more, and much like it does for your plants, right? It's using the mm-hmm. same function. I believe you can, but I know it's not necessarily the greatest thing for the environment. I think the better thing is avoid allowing that perlite to get into your waterways, I think would be big, because it's a fast track to the ocean. But if you have a compost heap in your backyard and you want to compost your plants there, I think that's a fine place to put it.
Okay, cool. Someone asked, are there alternatives to plastic nursery pots and stickers? So we kind of answered the nursery pot thing, but what about stickers that come on your fruit? Those plastic stickers?
Hold on, because I have a water bottle I've covered with stickers if you want to see it.
Well, sure.
Hold on.
You want to go grab it? Okay, cool.
Yeah. All right. So stickers on your produce drive me crazy.
Yeah.
It's something that I think is so unnecessary in today's world. And whenever I do get produce that have stickers on it, I actually take it and I put it on a swell bottle and I'm making art with my swell bottle here. And as you can see, there's a lot of stickers on here. But the best way to avoid that is to shop at your farmer's markets. You will rarely find stickers on your farmer's market produce, and even just reaching out to farms in general and seeing what kind of CSA programs they have. I do a lot of work out here in LA with a company called CropSwap, where you can literally order food directly from farmers. And there's no stickers, there's no wax on your produce. It is as clean as it gets. Obviously, you want to watch it first regardless, but it's a great way to avoid the stickers. The stickers drive me crazy. There is a cool company called No Issue, which makes biodegradable mailers. I've sent plants in them before, and they also have biodegradable stickers with soy plant-based inks, which is really, really cool.
Interesting.
So it'd be cool to see if they ever get into the produce space and start working with some of these companies for barcode stickers.
Yeah, I know when you lived in New York, you loved the Union Square Farmers Market. I love a farmer's market. And I'll say, like, the healthiest I've ever been was when I had a CSA. And it was a few years back, there was like a CSA that had a pickup around the corner for me. And you went, you brought your canvas bag. They didn't have bags for you. You show up once a week, you get whatever they're growing. It was the freshest food I ever had. And it really also encouraged me to eat so many more vegetables than I was normally eating. And also like directly supporting local farms. I mean, absolutely. It's like going CSA is like a win-win situation when you can.
Win-win-win-win.
Yeah, totally. When you can. I understand for some people that's not readily available in their town. And I hope companies like CropSwap make that more accessible and more available. And we'll link to them for sure too in the show notes. But man, I think you've given us so much food for thought. And I'm really excited to personally kind of evaluate where the areas that I can definitely improve. It's interesting. I went from being in a place where I could compost to there's no compost right now in the town that I live. So I'm very curious in my next move to maybe get some compost going and like learning about that. And I really love the commitment to try and shop locally when it comes to plants and support local nurseries. I really love that. So why is this all so important to you? And why do you think we should all take one step towards a more low waste lifestyle?
I think that there is so much, especially in today's world, that is dividing us. The environment being one of those things that can be quite polarizing depending on what views you have. I think no one can disagree with the fact that we all use nature and derive joy from nature and experience nature. Anyone who goes to a beach, anyone who's ever been on a hike, anyone who uses the ground to produce food knows that nature is important. It's my belief that I am on this planet to protect the planet. And I think all humans, in essence, should view themselves as stewards of the earth and gardeners. And the earth has given us so many things. They've given us every resource to be successful. And sometimes it doesn't require you to move to a log cabin and adopt the thorough lifestyle of being a recluse and off the grid, right? It's not what it has to be. You can live in sync with nature, and it can be done so in a way that does not detract from your lifestyle. In fact, it can enhance your lifestyle. So giving people those little tips that they can use every single day is really, really important.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, if we as plant people get so much joy out of caring for these plants, it's part of our responsibility as a plant parent to make sure that the outdoor plants, the outdoor world can continue growing.
And these plants grew somewhere. Outdoors, or they were indoors.
Yeah. And you know, there was a big conversation about it with all of the Amazon rainforest burning issues. And I think also these like wildfires in California, like I think people are starting to slowly wake up. But yeah, I think both Nick and I really just want to encourage everyone, especially at the end of 2020, and we're all kind of looking at 2021 and thinking about how excited we all are for 2020 to be over. But what good can we do? What steps can we take to ensure 2021 is going to be kick-ass for ourselves, but also for our world? And everybody should go follow you, Nick, and learn from you. I mean, your Instagram in itself is extremely educational. I loved that reel you mentioned on repurposing your plastic nursery pot. So where can everyone come find you?
Thanks, Maria. It's just Farmer Nick NYC on Instagram. Same thing for the website. If anyone has any questions about their plants, their gardens, their sustainability tips, whatever it is, definitely don't be afraid to shoot me a DM and I'll be happy to help.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for being on the show, Nick.
Thanks, Maria.
All right, friends, I hope this episode sparked maybe at least one new idea for how you can show up as a plant parent. Like Nick says and constantly is encouraging, sustainability is not about being perfect. It's about being a little more intentional every year, taking continuous small steps towards a more environmentally friendly experience. Be sure to follow Nick. He's linked in the show notes for daily sustainable inspiration. And of course, keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.